Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so hope you're all as excited as we are for this coming Sunday, 22 October, the second Japan Real Estate Summit in Shibuya, Tokyo, whether you're coming in person to meet us and the other like-minded folks who will attend face-to-face, network, ask questions, etc. in person, or you're not physically in Tokyo and you're tuning in via streaming, which will also enable you to ask questions and have them answered live on stage. We are thrilled to have you with us. And if there's anyone left here who still hasn't gotten his tickets, what the hell are you waiting for, folks? 5 days left. Stop listening right now. Go to realestate.jp and get your ticket. All right, so for today's episode, this is just me and the JREP ladies again, Tracy and Blanca, and they've been analyzing a short-term stay property project that they've both been working on together, converting a large family home into a guest house. So we talk about everything that goes with that, what license can and should be applied for, minpaku or a simple lodging or hotel license, the most advanced one, which lets you rent out individual rooms as opposed to the entire house. We talk about what renovations are required for each type of license and also what types of renovations one should consider to differentiate themselves from the competition. So things like outdoor showers and saunas and game rooms and karaoke setups, pet-friendly properties, and all sorts of other features that makes a short-term stay property really shine and, as a result, maximize its profitability. So this is exactly the type of analysis that Tracy is going to be going into in her presentation on Sunday, so you really don't want to miss out on this one. She also explains about how to match the right kind of photography to the kind of guest that you're trying to cater to, how different locations and nearby attractions make for different pricing and profitability. And that then led us to a slightly higher level conversation about marketing in general, business growth issues, how to properly prepare for growth, why we do what we do in the first place, what's scalable, what's not, and do we care about it? And then even more off the reservoir, we went to personal boundaries, connecting with customers or the general public on social media. Lots of fun stuff like that. Always a pleasure when it's only the ladies and myself, and this episode was no exception. I hope you enjoy the conversation as always, and I'll see you again on the other side.
All right. The more beautiful aspect of the Japan Real Estate Expert team is in session. Tracy's doing her magic. She's analyzing a short-term stay deal for us. So tell us, what kind of property is this?
It is a it's a large house that is being converted into a guest house. So we're not quite sure yet whether it's going to be a license for just renting out the whole house, or whether it'll be as a ryokan, as a hotel, or whether it's going to be a license so that each bedroom is going to be its own room. So there are certain rules about whether it's a simple lodging. So that's the I don't have the Japanese on me. I'm not Emil. but there's a simple lodging, which is where you rent the whole house as a as a hotel. And then there's the other type, which is where you rent individual rooms. So, and it really just comes down to like the regulations, and it's a case by case, and it's which city you're in. So there's a whole bunch of fun that comes with that. Obviously having the flexibility of being able to rent each room, and then also rent the whole house as a one-off as well, that any sort of thing where you can have more flexibility is better. So, you know, I guess from, you know, in terms of flexibility, it goes from like Minpaku, which is only 180 days a year, to Ryokan, simple lodging, which is the whole house, 365 days. And then the multi-room where you can rent out multiple rooms as 365.
I wasn't aware of that. I thought that if you get the hotel license, you can do both.
No, there's different rules, and so with the simple lodging, it's sort of, again, it's more like a, just because I've got a simple lodging one on my property, and it's basically just like Minpaku on steroids. So it's just, you know, it's a what you would probably what some people would say, oh, this is an Airbnb house, but it has a hotel license on it, so you just rent the whole thing, and that has some rules on it based on if it's gas, if it's electric, where are the exit lightings, what's the safety certificate. But then if you have a larger house and you've got multiple rooms, you can get the individual room. So even if you're there's a shared bathroom, the rules are you'll need to have a lock on every door, for sure, which is pretty standard. You can have shared bathrooms, but there's got to be so many per floor, based on how many rooms that there are. And this particular deal that we're doing will have actually on-site management. So the actual manager of the property will live in one of the bedrooms and also share the things like the kitchen and the bathroom. And then there's a couple of bathrooms, but it'll be a private, you can lock off that manager side. So their life will be, you know, they'll have a little bit of a separate life from running the hotel. So, you know, I guess that like the old B&B style, or, you know, that we're used to, country UK, for example. Mm.
And what does the, so is the property ready as it is, or does it need work?
That's why Blanco is here, because yes, it does need some. It is actually a big old family house.
It needs a lot of work, because, you know, we went for, I mean, in general, it looks good for the property of the size. It looks reasonably good, but of course, you know, right now there are carpets on the floors which are not in a condition at all to be kept. So, you know, all the carpets will have to be removed and put in a good flooring. We were discussing the flooring that is actually pet friendly, because in that area, it's great to come if you have a pet. And there is definitely not enough pet friendly short-term rental. So that actually can be one of the niches for the clients as well. So put a pet friendly flooring, then all the wallpaper and the ceilings, they all have to be changed. But, you know, when we did the very thorough examination, the bathroom has to be changed completely, and the kitchen as well, because unfortunately, you know, I think it's also because it has been empty for a while. The humidity did its job. So it's part of the kitchen. It's kind of like expanding, because it's not a real wood, but it's the composite, the kind of, so basically, so now it's like expanding and it's kind of foamy. So there is nothing, there's not a way you can actually salvage that. So considering you are doing it as a Minpaku and not your second home, it's actually important to kind of put it in a good condition when the clients are going to be using it. So there is quite a lot of work on the inside, and then, you know, outside, there are some wishes that the client wants to add, because it's a great location and it has so many outside water outlets that those can be utilized for like the outdoor shower, which is perfect, because you know, you go for a bike ride in that area, you come, you are all sweaty, So you just kind of want to, you know, maybe shower a little bit or just, you know, flush yourself, especially if you're also there with the dog. You want an outdoor shower for the dog so you can kind of spray him off and things. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done there. But
I'll just interrupt you there, Blanca. When I was talking about the outdoor shower, I was thinking of something a little more sexy, because it, like, you know, you could build something that's really, and like, that you could have a little private space outside and make it really an outdoor, really sexy outdoor shower. So,
okay. Yeah, you meant that kind of outdoor shower. I was more practical, you see.
Just double duty. But if you have it so that you can actually have it private, then and big enough, it's got such a big garden.
The space is big enough. So then, depending on where you want to put it, because the side on the one of the sides of the house, it's quite free, there is not much there, and there can be a really nice outdoor shower and outdoor sauna.
I know, I was suggesting so what you want to do when you're, especially in the countryside, because this is in the, this is not downtown, this is going to be like near the beach, having a kick-ass amenity like your like those outdoor saunas. And the one that I found, it's like big round one, and that it's like, it looks epic in photos, because remember, the photos are what's going to sell. And you can get this one fitted, like installed and fitted, for about $3,000, or
that is interesting price, because I was looking at some as well and they were far more expensive. So
this is just for two people. It's a two, like, it's not a big one, it's a quite small, but yeah. But it's, you know, you really you know, it's really for the photos, and it's really just and also to differentiate yourself from the neighbors or from so that was an interesting price, I thought.
That's a very good price, actually, because looking at some of them, but I mean, my team, they came up with this idea to me about a month ago, that they would be really interested to do that as part of some of the renos. So they were like, we'll build one in your house, so we can then, you know, be taking pictures and promoting it. The outdoor sauna, yeah, but but I'm like, I don't want anything else in my house anymore.
That's a point that we actually don't talk about that much. We always talk about the legal aspects and the logistics of management and so forth, but we never actually, I think, spoke in detail about the differences. Because obviously, when you're going to be catering, I actually just had an email like that from someone today. They're looking at this old shack for $20,000-$30,000 in the countryside, and but the location is beautiful. It's near a river. It's got grass. I'm sure people will want to rent it. But no, not as it is. Nobody wants to stay in an old... I mean, some people do, like the people who come to stay with Byron and his wife. But most people are looking for a comfortable, convenient, modern interior, right?
Well, you could make it sort of, you know, what is becoming popular is like, you know, destination accommodation. So if you make it, rather than just a place to stay, but make it like I've forgotten my English, like aspirational. So have something that you like, go, either differentiate yourself with like amazing interior design, or you know, really niche down and do interior design, or maybe off grid if you want to be very sustainable, because that's a, you know, that's a really key demographic. The pet friendly, absolutely. You know, having this outdoor sauna and outdoor shower, I mean, those are the things that are really gonna, you know, go, yeah, I want to go and stay there, even if it's not like right next to the beach or right next to something else. Like having that destination, aspirational destination is really, I think, is the way forward.
Because that we always say will not actually change the value of your house, so only do them if you're interested in them, but short-term stay, they are irrelevant.
Yeah, but those things, they will convert. They will if you are doing a rental property, it will convert, because you really need something that people will look at it and they're like, okay, this is why I want to stay there, right? Because the competition it's getting really, you know, it's quite big, I would say. So you need to have something. And as Tracy said, if it looks great in the pictures.
That's right. And you can really market it to, you know, a certain demographic. I mean, if you are really crunchy and granola and you do like the off-grid or, you know, the sustainability, if that is you and your personality, and that's something that is in your value set, that's something that you can totally market and get money for it, because you'll find other like-minded people, and when you've got that sort of synergy, that's when the businesses go really well. And you know where to market to, you know the language to use, you know the photos to take that's going to appeal to that demographic. So yeah, being very clear about who you're renting to, and just having some really kick-ass amenities that, you know, whether it's a games room, because we're actually talking to this client as well about having a games room. I mean, there's nothing around that has a games room. In America, the short-term rentals, they've all got games rooms, or they've converted a garage into a games room, or they've got the pool or whatever. So it's here in Japan, the short-term rentals are still fairly generic.
Yeah.
But it's the market's going to mature, and the ones that you can command that high price for are going to have something that photographs really well and that people want to take. Like, putting a games room in isn't actually that hard. It doesn't cost a lot of money. It's just using your imagination and having the guts to go and do it.
For this particular client, I would say it's going to cost a little money, because where we want to position the games room, it has to be fixed up a lot, and then also the walls over there have to be enforced.
Yeah.
You know, so basically it's almost like building a new room. Because if you got it, when we got what it's there now,
it's pretty flimsy. Yeah, it's pretty flimsy what's there now.
It is flimsy. So to enforce it, it will cost money, but then it can be...
It will pay for itself.
If you are already building the new walls, you can easily soundproof them. So once you soundproof them, you know, palm, you put in karaoke, and after the kids finish playing and they go sleep, the adults can have a lot of fun.
And so what I do is I help people figure out, well, you know, if I put in this amenity, how much does it cost, and how long will it take, or how much can I put up my nightly rate, and so how long will it take me to pay off this? And I usually feel a conservative on that. Because you don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. But you can say, well, this amenity here, you could probably charge an extra 1,000 yen a night, 2,000 yen a night, and that's gonna pay itself off in however many months.
Especially because I can tell you that a foreign client will look at this as a big plus. Maybe not a Japanese client, but foreign clients, they will consider that to be a big plus, because they are all looking for a place to have the kids, you know, kind of on their own. They know that they are noisy. We are even fixing up one of the skiing condos, and we are actually adding an extra room, building a room from scratch, from where right now is nothing, just beams. We are building a new game room there, because the client is like, listen, we are usually here at least two to three families with children.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want the kids to be downstairs with us when, you know, us adults are watching telly, or we are, you know, drinking, having conversation. We want them upstairs with their, you know, PlayStation or whatever, you know, in that room. So we are building an extra room. This particular client is willing to spend almost 2 million yen on the room alone, just to have the new room. So they can get basically rid of the kids. But it's a very, very good investment, because when you think about it, if you have families, if you want to appeal to families, they need to know that, okay, the kids will have a good place where to spend time, because if kids are not entertained, the parents are not happy.
But you can also adapt, have a hybrid games room, and to really appeal to a Japanese audience as well, by just adding in a karaoke feature. Right?
That's what I because that's why I mentioned the karaoke. But what I'm saying, like, maybe Japanese clients are not that particular about having a games room. I don't know if they are really, if that is something that they are really looking forward to. But I think that foreigners, they definitely are.
Sure. It depends on the age group. I think groups of like millennial Japanese will certainly be interested in a games room, karaoke, you know. But families, you know, slightly older foreigner families. So yeah, you can have multiple guest avatars that you're marketing to, and just with some slight tweaks, really sort of hit the pleasure point or the pain point of your guest, and to convert, because it's what you got to do. There's so much competition that you want to be, you know, grabbing them and making that conversion happen.
Yeah, you want to tick as many boxes as possible. So yes. Yeah. So I think that's really good. So like we're doing that, and then, you know, if they can add a little workout room there as well, I find that to be always really helpful. I'm kind of, even when we travel, I always like, not that we particular always end up using it, but like having an option to go to gym is always a good option. If it's just because we even have few machines behind our house, just for us, like, okay, if I have 15 minutes in the morning, I can go and, you know, do a short workout. So it's always good to have that option for clients. And this one, the property has the space. So there's a lot. And then, you know, at a barbecue and you're golden.
Yeah. I know some women in Tokyo, and when she designed her short-term rental in Tokyo, she looked around and was like saying, okay, well, what isn't around? And she noticed that there was not the home gym that was very popular for overseas. And so when she designed her place, she had a size of concrete, you know, a concrete building in Ebisu, and she put in, she got the builder at the building stage to actually build in like pull-up bars into the walls. And then, and also then she's got photographs of like, here is with someone doing yoga, like they've got the yoga mat out or they've got the Pilates ball. So that's who she's targeting and marketing to. And it was just a very smart idea of hers at the building stage, the design phase, to go, right, well, what's the amenity that's going to convert and also set me apart from everyone else in the street. Yeah. She was such a clever thing to do.
Yeah, well, this place has a nice space outside, so a lot of like outdoor activities can be done there. So I would definitely not be worried about that. So at the end of the day, it all boils down to budget.
Yeah, and I've told this. So this is the same client that Blanca and I are working together on, and I've told this client that there are also ways that they can add additional money by you know, maybe having a few like e-bikes to rent, or having, you know, being able to offer a pickup service to the beach and back if someone doesn't have a car. So there's a couple of ways to add additional revenue streams on top of their nightly rate. Yes. But during the summer is where they're going to really rake in the money. So the pets, being pet friendly, they can charge additional money for being pet friendly, and have an additional deposit for being friendly, for damage and things, and then as well some of these extra items. So the games room, they're going to have to offer that for free. They're not going to be able to charge extra for it, but they will charge an addition, like a premium overnight rate.
Pretty it's a great location, so I think they can really, really do well on it. It's just that, like, yeah, we just have to get in. And they have to decide what they want to do from what we're going to be offering them, and then decide what they do want to do, what they don't want to do, and then go from there. And then
I've got to figure out how much they can earn per month. And it's like, because there's not a huge, I'm looking at the data tools. So I use things like AirDNA, and I use Price Labs, and some of these aggregators. So it's big data that's scraping all of the all of the information on price and availability, and it crunches all the numbers of what's around in the area. But because there's not a huge number of short-term rentals in the area, I'm really going on a limited data stack and then having to put my own magic on top of it to go, you know what, even though the data is not showing this, if you get these amenities and you're marketing it to this particular demographic, then I think, don't want to put my reputation on the line, I think that you're going to be charging this amount of money. And so this is the amount that you can cash flow out afterwards. So
I guess you can estimate based on distance from popular attractions, right? Like if this particular neighborhood is that distance to Tokyo Tower, for example, then it's probably going to be similar to that neighborhood, right?
Yeah, in Tokyo, it's a lot easier because there's so many more short-term rentals in Tokyo. But when you're kind of in the countryside, it's a bit hard. And it's a bit of like, you've got to hold your nose and jump, really. And like, you know, and but the thing is, these are clients who are investing money. So it's like they're really relying on my like professional opinion. So I've got to temper the, with what I can prove or what I can, you know, what's going to happen. So it's like, oh. It's really—it's a bit nerve-wracking right now.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's the investment at the beginning is always really big.
Yeah.
And then
they know what the thing is, they know what they're doing. And I think, and they've got a couple of targets that they can, you know, a couple of tools in their tool belt where they can use off-platform marketing to actually drum up the interest and not just put it out on Airbnb or the other things. They can actually create their own demand based on their own branding and based on their own, like, network of fans. So,
Good that this is a place that you know it can fit in small retreat as well.
Yes, corporate retreats, yeah, midweek or winter,
You know, so I mean, then you have yet another group, and because you have the space outside, you can do even yoga retreats, you know, and it's a very nice area, you know, with the fresh air and everything. I mean, it's really nice,
it's glorious,
yeah.
And so, Ziv, how are you going? It's been a while since we've seen you.
We're doing well. On a bit of a property purchasing blitz. So we've got that rental building that's being constructed as we speak. That mortgage has been approved. And now we're a home loan, which is going to be a home office. If we get the one we want, at least it's going to be a home office. So office on the ground floor and then living quarters on the top floor kind of thing, like a big house.
So this is new for you. So like, because the business loan is the rental property, like the rental building, and then there's a private mortgage for your personal. Is that correct. Right?
Man, okay. But
I haven't heard of that one.
Build the office, and it's funny, when we started, we were working from home with our single staff member, and then we got to get a central office, and we want to separate it, and now we're kind of circling back to having the home office again, but in a more appropriate space.
Mm. Yeah. Well, how many is in your team now?
One, two, three, four, will be four of us in the Fukuoka office and one in Tokyo plus the two of us. So seven-ish.
Wow, great.
That's amazing. And you know, how much money have you got under management now?
I was trying to work that out. I'm not sure, but I'm guessing if we run an average of, let's say, 4 million yen per property times about 200 of them, so I guess about $8 million worth of assets ish.
Oh my god!
Love that.
That's fantastic. Oh, that's brilliant.
Oh, a while ago, but we were kind of holding off to see if it's sustainable. But it's definitely sustainable. What's not sustainable is our staffing. So yeah.
Oh my god! Same problem. It's I'm dying here. I need Jimoinane so badly, and like at least one more Egyoman.
We're in bookkeeping now just because we've already cycled through two or three bookkeepers, and that's the most heavy in training heavy aspect of our work, is to train the bookkeeper to do bookkeeping for like 200 customers or whatever the case may
exactly.
be.
Yeah, that's hard for you, because you're holding other people's cash, which is critical, which you've got to be auditable, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Training them, and then after 6 months, for whatever reason, they leave, and then it's another 6 months of training a new one, which takes us another 6 months to find. So we just, you know, screw it. We're just outsourcing all the bookkeeping to a single care who's doing it. I just talk to the shacho.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Well, I'm onboarding some new properties in the Tokyo Family States. Yes. I'm still desperately looking for some rental arbitrage deals. Oh, I've got cash to burn. So if you hear of a friendly landlord who'll let me rental arbitrage, I'm all ears.
You don't need a house in Matsuda.
Sorry. I'll shut up.
No, not in Matsudo.
Yeah, I have two. I could have given you two of mine.
No, not in Matsudo. So Zeev, what were you going to say? You met someone.
Yeah, who just slept at one of your properties. He came from Tokyo. He just stayed at one of your properties. He was very pleased. He said it was amazing.
I know who that client is, and I had a lovely coffee with him. He just stayed at one of my properties, and he's now down to see you because he's looking at buying, and he probably won't, because he was sort of saying, oh, what about this building? And I'm like going, oh, you wouldn't be able to get a license for this particular one. So, yeah. But, he was staying in a nice place. Mm.
But we're both talking about it would be really nice if we could replicate you to other parts of the country, because just Kanto Kanagawa is not enough for us.
Well, you know what? I think my goal really is to try and get some systems in place and to do myself out of a job in terms of like the guest communications, and so that then I can like rinse and repeat in other markets. But you know, I really do love, as much as I love teaching and I love consulting, I really do love catching up with my guests. I love meeting them. I love making them happy. You know, it just feeds that sort of people pleasing gene that I think I have. But I've also learned some boundaries on you know, making sure that I'm people pleasing the ones that are like giving me the love back. And it's just it's a bit addictive, actually. You know,
it is very, and even like the customer communications and you know enjoying it on a daily basis is just really. It's very addictive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I do have to sort of try and get my dopamine hit as well as, you know, manage my time. I mean, I've got an intern starting next month, and his job is going to be really to take our automation and next level up. Because just some things that we're doing manually that we could be automating, and I just don't have time to implement. So
exactly what you mean. Like I love going out and looking at properties on behalf of customers and meeting them and going on tours, but it's just not scalable, is it?
No. No, because I mean, we do that for fun. Like, I was just thinking that when my mother lived in Japan, she lived in Tokyo for 5 years. So my mother and my father, and this is 20 years ago that they did that. We, on the weekends, my mother and I had a hobby, and we would ride our little bicycle to whatever open room that was available, like model room. And if you're in Japan, if you're in Tokyo, you can, you know, often that comes the junk mail that comes in the letterbox, there'll be something, there'll be like a new development, and they always have like an open room. And of course, you know, being the sticky beak that I am, my mother and I used to just amuse ourselves like on a Sunday afternoon and go and see two or three of these open rooms and like go, you know what, I don't quite like the way that kitchen's set out. It's not really practical. Or how about those drawers? Oh, I like that cupboard. Just funny old birds we were. And it was just our hobby, and it was free, and it was just amusing. It must be amusing to all of the real estate agents out there as well, because we're never going to buy. But, you know.
And they can tell usually when you walk in, but then on the other hand, you know, somebody can surprise you.
Yeah, but it was fun anyway. And I guess that was even, but like when I say that was 20 years ago, this is even before I got into real estate. So it was, there was something there already that was that, you know, we weren't the type to go out shopping and, you know, 20 years ago, there was no shops for us to go and buy clothes in anyway, because. No. It was just a way for us to amuse ourselves and have a bonding thing together. So,
Yeah, worked out well.
Worked out well. And you can still do it. Like, you know, there's still model rooms everywhere. Mm.
But you will, though. Like, Chika and I still keep the property viewings in, like, really scenic spots that we enjoy the drive down to. But everything else we just, you know, outsource. I mean, honestly, I'm sure in your case, too, there are some guests that you don't really want to or have to meet face-to-face when they check in and check out, right?
No. Well, someone from my company meets every guest, 100%. Yeah. We did actually have a self-check-in. So we went to Cirque du Soleil the other day, and we had a check-in, and it was like, oh, hang on, there's no one. Like, it was Sunday, like none of this team were on, and it was in our house, so it's normally us that do the check-in. It's like, we're not going to be here. So we arranged a self-check-in system for them. So that was quite funny.
Mm. You're still on with all your renovations, Blanca? Are you still involved in every project?
Yes. More, I would say at this point, more than I actually thought I will be. Because, as I mentioned, I'm short-staffed. I need people in the office. I need people for the work, and like Kantoku to kind of, you know, observe and inspect and check on the workers and stuff. And because we are short staffed, so I basically took on I'm the sole salesperson for the job right now. I get all the jobs, and then, you know, my guard is then he works on the quotations, and then, you know, he supervises as well. So at this point, we are basically from the managerial position, it's the two of us, and then we have one older gentleman that helps us on the Kantoku point of view. But, you know, as I'm saying, he's older, so he can't. But he's so sweet. It's just I wish I had an office full of these old men, because that would be a pleasure. It's like they're just so adorable. So
I agree. Old Japanese men are very cute. Yes,
of course. You know. And Japanese old men love me. They're just so easy to work with. So, but yeah, everything, and we've done so well. Thank God. So we're really busy. So yeah, if I can clone myself double to triple, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I was actually scolded by a customer this week, which made me realize he was like, is there anybody else that we can talk to rather than wait for you to reply to our emails every time? Like, yeah, we're working on that.
Yeah. And I try to reply as fast as possible. But then I realized that at times I'm talking to the customer still 11 p.m. or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, hold on a second, this is not okay.
boundaries.
Yes, boundaries.
Therefore, we reply means we're on, right?
Exactly, because once you reply one, then they start asking all these questions, and then you realize it's like a 2 hours convo. So I'm always like, after eight, I'm looking at the phone and it's like, do I want to look at this or do I not want to look at this?
Exactly what I'm learning.
Yeah. And then I always tell them, yeah, but I have to ask my manager this, and it's past 8 o'clock and I'm trying not to be that boss. So I always tell them, I'm trying not to be that boss that that messages workers 24/7. So I set up my boundaries, at least with the staff, that I don't message them past 8 o'clock.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough.
Until eight, I still think they can, answer. But past eight, I don't do that anymore.
Somebody told me last week saying, oh, for a call, I'm available between 1 to 6 a.m. Japan time. But I'm not.
Of course not. Then it's crazy. That's like literally your deepest sleep time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with my consulting, I actually have set up a calendar, and then people can just book into my calendar, and then it's easy then, because I just know what, like, I just look in the morning and like who's booked in, and then I can. My calendar is only open from certain times, and because there's a lot of people from different time zones, I try to have there's 1 or 2 days a week where it's like really early morning or late evening, so that there are some options. But having from 1 to 5, every day is just nuts when you're running a global business. So,
no, it's difficult because we all have something around the world. But, it's different if it's like once in 2 weeks or once a month. But when it comes every evening, I'm like, no. And for big projects, I feel bad because I don't want to tell the clients, look at the clock.
Yeah.
Because those are big. We are doing some really, really nice projects. And so, of course, they text because they get all excited and, they find new things that they might want to try. But it's difficult. It's hard to, because I'm very invested in the project as well. So it's hard. But yeah, I'm trying to be better and learn more boundaries, so I'm not always on the phone.
Well, with my staff, I don't use Facebook Messenger because that's 24 hours. But I use a project team management thing, and then they can log, it's all there, the threads are all there, and then they can log in at that when they're at their convenience. So we use that. It's quite good.
What do you use?
Slack, that works well for us.
Tracy, what do you use?
I use Basecamp, but any of those Slack or Monday or Trello, any of those things.
Okay.
Project money, but I don't, people's private texts and people's private Facebook Messenger, I don't use for work at all.
Facebook.
Sorry?
I'm not friends with people from work on Facebook.
Can't do it anymore. They just add me and it's rude not to.
So. I don't add them. I don't even have any clients, I think, on my Facebook. Because we have quite a busy life, and I don't want them to think that because I traveled means I'm not working. Mm-hmm. It's at times it's difficult to explain to people that I don't actually have to sit in the office to be on top of things. So I just always tell everybody, listen, you want to connect on a business level, that we can do LinkedIn, or in Japan, Line is very popular, so we can create a Line group. Mm-hmm. but I don't allow them on my Facebook. I love Facebook. That's why I don't allow them, because I actually share on Facebook. So, as you know.
Yes, I do.
I love Facebook. I have so many family and friends so far away that for them, it's the way how they can keep tab on our family's, you know, adventures.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually actively share on Facebook, but that's why, like, little by little, about every day, I kind of drop one or two person lately, because I realized that those are people I have nothing to, you know, nothing in common with anymore. They were like, I met them and at them some time ago. So I would not say every day, but every now and then I kind of, especially on people's birthday, I'm the worst person. When the birthday reminder pops up, I look at it like, oh, okay, this person, out.
I don't know.
I give them the gift of freedom on their birthday. I'm horrible.
No, most people are exactly like you. I think I'm just like an open book, and I've got no filters on my mouth, so I share everything and I don't care. But most people are like you. Like, if I even say the word chica and it's not friends only, she'll bite my head off. So yeah.
Really? I love off. Listen, I've told everybody, if you take picture with me, you should count that most probably, if I had a good time with you, it's going to end up there, because I appreciate that, you know, and that's what it is. You know what? I share my life. If you don't like it, one smartass was commenting on, because we went for like an event dinner, and I was, you know, sharing from that event dinner, because I know that's something like a lot of people actually enjoys. So I've shared a post from that event dinner, and the guy was like, oh, It's all good. Nobody cares what you ate.
Why are you on so? Like,
buddy, delete. He was so quickly out of my. Because I was like, it does not even justify a reply. Just like, out of my life.
Exactly.
But you, Banka, I actually love seeing your meal photos.
You see, I mean, I also love seeing people's like restaurants photos and stuff like, because for me, or travel photos, because it gives me ideas where to go and what to do. We are huge foodies, so we love to go to restaurants. So when my friends post videos or pictures from nice restaurants, even like izakayas with good food, whatever, I'm like, okay, where is this? Gets on my list, right? So, or with travels, I see, oh, great beach. I can see myself there.
Yeah.
So immediately, where is this? I bookmark it, and next time I'm planning a travel, I know where to go. So I actually believe in like my friend's recommendations far more than any other. So I love seeing
social proof. Absolutely.
So I love seeing that on people's feet. So if somebody has a problem with that on my feet, then I'm sorry, they don't belong there.
Yeah. You know? Unfriend.
Yep.
Yes.
It was brief. It was very brief friendship. I've added him because he closed his professional page. It was one of the possible contractors. And
We lost her.
Oh, we lost her. Okay, she's gone away. So today, I've actually been speaking today at a university. That's why I have a washed face and lipstick on. I was lecturing at a travel and tourism university. So they're like second year university students, all very young and fresh faced. They're all doing travel and tourism. And I gave them a cut down version of the talk that I gave at our seminar last February. And I gave them the history of the minpaku in Japan and the history of the word and where it's come from, and also what it's like as a real life minpaku host on a day-to-day basis. So Yeah, I really enjoyed speaking to the students. So, and they paid me, which was really great. So I'm open to more of that.
So I ask, is it turning into a permanent gig or?
Oh no, it's just, it was so they have extra credit. The kids can go to a lunchtime seminar from a visiting person who works in travel and tourism. And so, you know, today it was me, you know, maybe next month it'll be someone who runs a food tour, or maybe next month, not, it might be someone who runs a luxury tour company. So just so that these kids can see what, you know, real life working people.
Mm. Really nice book.
And they get extra credit. I think that's what they really go for. So.
All right. Hell of a lot of fun that was. Hope you thought so too. And yeah, nothing really left to say except come and have a chat, listen to Tracy do her thing this coming Sunday, 22nd October, as well as to Anton, who's buying and renovating and profiting from Akia's abandoned homes, Emil, the absolute master of family homes and mortgages, and myself. And I'm going to be talking about different asset classes, who each of them might be suitable for or not, and why. And of course, the most popular parts of the event, which are the Q&A panel and the general networking with other folks like yourselves, which is where the real magic and future opportunities really come to life. I cannot wait to see you all this Sunday, either in person in Shibuya or online in the streaming Zoom room. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!